Good afternoon. This is Debbie Saracen. I'm Manager of Practice Enhancement and Quality Reporting at ACOFP. And today we're going to be talking about telemedicine for the family physician. Today we have two guest speakers, Dr. Christopher Scuderi and Dr. Shaw. I'm going to introduce Dr. Christopher Scuderi, and then he will proceed with the podcast and introduce Dr. Shaw. Christopher Scuderi is Associate Chair of Clinical Operations and Clinical Associate Professor of Family Medicine at the University of Florida College of Medicine in Jacksonville, Florida. He is also the Medical Director of the University of Florida Health, Family Medicine, and Pediatrics at New Berlin. Dr. Scuderi is also the co-chair of the ACOFP Alternative Payment Model Committee. So welcome, Dr. Scuderi and Dr. Shaw, and I'll be turning this over to Dr. Scuderi.
Thanks, Debbie, for the introduction. And it's my pleasure this afternoon to introduce our chair here at the University of Florida College of Medicine, Department of Community Health and Family Medicine. Dr. Nipa Shaw is both professor and chair of the department, and she is the chair of the Telemedicine Task Force at the University of Florida College of Medicine in Jacksonville. She has a special interest in utilizing technology and creative ways to find solutions to common challenges in medicine. She's received numerous awards. She's received numerous large grants to help advance family medicine, and it's just been a very, very positive force here in Jacksonville and throughout the state. And so it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Shaw today, and welcome to this podcast.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Shaw, today we're going to be discussing telemedicine, and there's a lot of physicians out there who are interested in telemedicine or, you know, want to learn more about it to see that if it's a fit for their family practice. And so for physicians out there who are unsure about it, can you please define telemedicine for the family physician?
Sure. Telemedicine has become so mainstream now in healthcare that it has many meanings. Sometimes it's also referred to as telehealth. Basically, one way to look at it is telemedicine is using technology that avoids the face-to-face visit, but uses either audio or video to communicate. So even using your telephone to call a patient in the past was referred to as telemedicine. Today, when we think of telemedicine, it is mostly a conceptual idea that I'm going to communicate with the patient using video, a virtual platform for communication.
Excellent. So for a physician who's interested in participating in family medicine, how can they do this, and what equipment would they need to participate in family medicine, to participate in telemedicine with their patients?
That's a very good question. Family medicine physicians in this country are at a variety of stages when it comes to adaptation of telemedicine. Some are at the very beginning stages. For example, they still might have paper medical records. Others are very advanced and may work for large institutions that already support telemedicine platforms. Majority of major institutions who have this platform partner with a private sector company that offers telemedicine services seamlessly to their patient population. But for the family medicine physician who's sort of at the beginning stages, the equipment that would be needed would simply be an ability to communicate in a private way via video. So, for example, if Skype was felt safe by two parties to communicate about personal health information, Skype could be used. If your electronic health record supports telemedicine software, then that particular form could be used. There are, of course, in this growing billion-dollar industry, many vendors who will sell you a product that you can purchase to use in conjunction with your current whatever medical record you have that will help ease this communication.
Excellent. Thank you. And so for physicians who are on the fence what are some of the current benefits of telemedicine? What are some of the things that you would stress to them why they should take a new set of eyes to look at telemedicine?
For physicians, there are many factors. Number one is time. I can't imagine a physician who doesn't feel time pressured. And for them to adapt a new technology, to learn about billing for a new service, to change the culture in which they practice and really look at how they're communicating is a serious time commitment. So the benefits of telemedicine has to be really outright worthwhile for their time. They have to commit. They have to understand that the return on investment for this is high. So the benefits of telemedicine would be, of course, much easier if all insurance companies paid the same that they do for in-person visits. Some states mandate this. Other states do not. And so we're all over the spectrum in the U.S., depending on where you practice, as to what the payment mechanism is. So assuming that you are getting some sort of reasonable reimbursement from telemedicine and that barrier is out of the way, the other benefit of telemedicine is simply convenience to our patients and convenience to us. It's very frustrating for family medicine physicians to not be able to provide very quick and immediate service to their patients when they're in need. Nothing is worse than a patient calling and saying, I'm really sick, I need to be seen, and the front desk representative or the nurse looks at the schedule and says, I'm really sorry, we can't fit you in for 3 days. That's frustrating for the patient and also for the physician. So what telemedicine does is take some of those barriers away. And when the physician starts using telemedicine in their daily routine, they understand that having that ability to give immediate access for concerns that are urgent for that patient brings a satisfaction not only for the patient but also for the physician.
Excellent. That's a great answer and explanation, you know, for that, because I think a lot of physicians struggle, is this something worth adapting? I think that would help push them in that direction. You know, one of the questions that we often see about telemedicine is, what are some of the payer mix and insurance issues that you've seen with telemedicine? And then a follow-on question to that is, has there been any improvements with the new CMS laws that were recently released?
So very, very good questions. There is a national organization called the American Telemedicine Association, which has really taken on lobbying and pushing states to adapt reasonable, physician-friendly telemedicine rules. 27 states in the U.S. currently have adapted some sort of mandatory payment for telemedicine services from the insurance companies within their states. Others are sort of evolving towards that. And Medicare, of course, is a leader. So Medicare's new 2,000-plus page rules have developed, sort of opened the door, really, for telemedicine. Starting January 1, there's going to be a lot more flexibility about payment for telemedicine for Medicare patients. And remote patient monitoring is now going to be reimbursed. And then the store and forward technology that we often talk about will also be reimbursed for telemedicine, as well as virtual visits. In the past, really the only way Medicare patients got paid, services for Medicare patients got reimbursed by CMS was if the patient was at a remote site in a rural location at a doctor's office, and then their consultant was at a more central location, and that service was reimbursed. But these new rules really expand the way that telemedicine can be reimbursed. So we're looking forward to other insurances who are sort of slow to bring this on, to follow suit, and usually when Medicare leads, others do follow. So we're excited about this new opportunity. Most insurances realize the benefit of it. They hesitate because they, of course, don't want it abused and overused. For example, in the past, they never paid for telephone calls, right? And now they're worried that if we use video visits, a quick two-minute video visit will engender a full 99213 bill. And they think that that might be abused or overused. So they're hesitant and they want to put in some limits. But I think most insurance companies are understanding the benefits of telemedicine and coming around, especially since there's a lot of research now that shows not only return on investment, but also improved patient outcomes with the use of telemedicine.
Thank you. So what are some of the challenges that some of your physicians are facing as they implement telemedicine, and what are some of the creative solutions that they've come up with? You know, some of the things that people should be aware of as they start with telemedicine.
So using video visits in providing care is a total paradigm shift. It's a culture change. The other day we had a patient who, you know, joined our telemedicine virtual room for the beginning of a visit, and our physician who was providing care on our side realized that the patient was actually driving while talking about her health condition. So she had to gently tell the patient, why don't you just pull over and call us back in a few minutes? And that did happen. So sometimes it's ultra convenient, and we have to be careful that it's done in a safe manner. Liability remains one of the big concerns with telemedicine. This is a new form of communication. Is it going to be recorded? Is it going to be used against me in some way? What if I misdiagnose? Because we're so used to this in-person encounter, and we can do a thorough physical exam, and we feel good about sharing our hesitations and getting a full understanding of the patient's situation before we make a diagnosis and a treatment plan, and now we have certain limitations. So what if I get it wrong? That's another concern, of course. And the challenges, again, for many physicians are not only about fear of new technology, but also payment. Will my in-person patient population be diminished if telemedicine is utilized more? And, you know, whether physicians understand challenges and are ready to face them is going to be a moot point. It is a moot point for the most part. For example, other institutions like major pharmacies now in our country have apps. So if you download a certain app from a pharmacy, you can certainly refill your medications or ask for refills through that app. You can get reminders for your medications through that app. And guess what? You can now 24/7 access a primary care provider through that app. So it's our competition. So whether folks are hesitant, folks are not going to start because of their challenges, maybe a moot point. They may not have a choice because the patients will demand that when they need a physician, that a physician be accessible relatively soon.
Excellent. Yeah, and it's definitely changing the marketplace. So as osteopathic family physicians, we're taught in school the importance of a physical exam and how important that is in the patient-physician relationship. And so how do you allay those fears and get beyond that in having a telemedicine visit? I think a lot of osteopathic physicians probably feel uncomfortable treating a patient without doing a physical exam. How do we help move physicians beyond that fear to be comfortable providing telemedicine?
In no way should the in-person exam and visit be seen as something inferior to telemedicine. Without a doubt, in my opinion, whenever possible, it is much better on all ends, on the receiving side of care and on the giving side by the physician, to have an in-person traditional visit. You know, there's a lot of anxiety with illness and sort of some hand-holding and eye contact shows concern, and that in itself has a healing component. And telemedicine, I don't think, is meant to ever replace that. What we're looking at is issues where healthcare is jeopardized because access is limited or not available. So for the osteopathic family physician who really values physical exam, that physical exam should be done, and it should be done in person. But when follow-up care is needed and the physical exam has already been done, especially recently, and the findings of the physical may not necessarily alter the treatment plan, for example, in chronic diseases, right? That is something that telemedicine can certainly help with. And then the other role is mental health. Up to 50% of primary care visits, as we know, have a mental health component, have an anxiety around the illness that is often either ignored or not addressed or addressed incompletely. Using telemedicine to sort of reinforce support during an anxiety-filled illness time can really augment that care. In the past, what we would do, well, not in the past, in some situations now, when we see a physician, when we see a patient, we would, you know, do a 20, 30-minute visit and reassure them. And knowing that our schedule is full and we won't be able to see them for another month, we sort of just hope that they're doing well on their own. Now, imagine augmenting that 30-minute visit with a follow-up telemedicine visit a week later, where you review their medications, you reassure their progress, or you augment their medications a little bit to better treat their condition, and then also see them a month later in person. Now you've just basically held that patient in your practice forever because they're so grateful that that follow-up occurred in a multimodality way, which was convenient for the patient and also convenient for the physician.
It's an excellent way to keep patients engaged. You know, as you look to the future, what do you think the future holds for telemedicine in improving the physician-patient relationship? I know you just alluded to that a little bit in the last answer, but could you expand upon how you think that the patient-physician relationship will be improved upon by telemedicine? And then a second question beyond that is, do you think telemedicine has a role in helping reduce some of the symptoms of physician burnout that we're seeing? We know it's very high in family physicians. We're seeing a lot of our colleagues struggling. And so does family medicine possibly play a role in helping reduce some of that too?
So let me tell you some examples of how we're using telemedicine that's improved the physician-patient relationship here. We have two hospitals in our system, and they're about, you know, a 20-minute drive apart. And if a patient is admitted to the smaller hospital and needs a consultant, we can use telemedicine so that the consultant can be available at the bedside, you know, for limited conditions, of course. So that is the future. The future is immediate access to their whole healthcare team. The patient-physician relationship should be established in person first. At our institution, I've sort of made it a guideline that and a requirement that telemedicine not be administered to new patients. That may change in the future as we get more competitive, but I think one of the benefits of a family physician is the continuity of care. And if you have that trust from that initial in-person visit well established, then follow-up telemedicine visits are a lot easier and better received by all parties. So I think the future holds improved relationships between physicians and patients. Especially as payment mechanisms fall into place and we get paid for this extra time that we're spending doing virtual visits as well as in-person visits. And burnout is prevalent everywhere. And I can tell you from one of our physicians' experience who performs over 200 telemedicine visits a month that it has helped with burnout. And interestingly, it not only helps with burnout of the physician, because what happens is they will have, let's say, three appointments that involve in-person visits, and then the fourth visit is a telemedicine visit. So they'll go into their office, they'll sit down for a break, they'll have a telemedicine visit, and they'll document and then go back to their other schedule with seeing patients who have shown up in person. That sort of balance helps break up the day. And the waiting time is improved as well, right? Because it's much easier for a patient to wait at home than it is for them to wait in a clinic room where there's nothing to do, or even in a waiting room where other people might be sick and coughing on them. So that's helped with that. But the other thing about burnout is the staff. When there's a telemedicine visit built into your schedule, the staff is not checking them in. They get a break. They feel like they can catch up on their day as well. So interestingly, the burnout issues, I think, are going to be augmented by this.
You know, it's fantastic because I know that staff burnout is an issue, and by allowing the physician to do a telemedicine visit and to take a break, it allows the staff a chance to catch up and to maintain a nice pace of the day, which is important because our staff, I think, really feels it today as we're asking them to do more and more. So that's a great point, Dr. Shaw. So one of the concerns I've heard from physicians is that they're concerned that if we really embrace telemedicine, we're going to become a commodity and that it's going to devalue our role as family physicians Do you mind addressing that concern?
Absolutely. First of all, I don't think our role will ever be devalued. We provide continuity of care for the whole family, and that is invaluable in many forms. Really, telemedicine is not about a commodity or a radical change. All we're doing is adding in our armatorium a whole different way to communicate. Currently, we can see a patient at the grocery store and say hello. We can see them in our clinic. We can see them at their home during a home visit. We can see them in the hospital. We can call them over the phone. All telemedicine is doing is saying, hey, I can also connect with you through a video visit. So really, it's just a different mode of communication that we're adding to the possibilities of ways to communicate with the patient. I think what will lessen the value of a family physician, and this is being talked about in many research private sector studies, is millennials. A recent study did come out that says millennials don't really value a family medicine or primary care physician because they have gotten used to using technology to access care when they need it. And usually when you're young, at most, you know, besides an occasional preventive visit, you need urgent care visits. So for them to wait and call and make an appointment and then wait in a waiting room and spend a half day for an urgent issue that could be handled through an app, that is our competition. That is already happening. And a whole new generation is growing and coming of age expecting that sort of immediate service. So it's not so much that the value of a family physician is lessened, except that the role of a family physician is going to have to be adaptable and change to the demands of the next generation.
Excellent. I appreciate that, Dr. Shaw. What documentation is necessary if you do a telemedicine visit? Is there certain parts of our typical 99213, 99214 that is necessary, or how do we document for a telemedicine visit?
So the same rules for now apply to documenting telemedicine visits if you're going to bill for them through the insurance as in-person visits. So the same medical decision-making, the elements of the physical, the history of present illness, all of that has to be documented. The physical exam is always the trickiest part. And for those physicians in our system who have already done telemedicine visits, it's not impossible to do a physical exam. For example, you could have a family member, press on their abdomen to see if it causes discomfort or pain. Again, not for complete diagnosis, but to help get more information. So some parts of the physical, of course, are visual. So a dermatological case, we have patients presenting with rash. Well, they can certainly point the camera at the section of their body that has a rash, and we can use our visual skills to diagnose that. Same with conjunctivitis. That's a common reason for a telemedicine visit in our institution, and that could certainly be diagnosed and treated using telemedicine.
Excellent. As we move toward value-based care and as we move towards value-based funding, can you think of any innovative ways that telemedicine can help us to perform better at population management? Is there some ways that we can help tackle registries using telemedicine to be more effective?
So when you look at population health, you're certainly looking at two things. One is preventive medicine. You want everyone to be screened for their breast cancer or colon cancer possibilities. And then you're looking at management of chronic diseases. If you look at those two sectors, telemedicine could certainly help in both of those. The chronic disease management is taking center stage when it comes to telemedicine. And in fact, Medicare's new payment guidelines help support that with the remote patient monitoring and the store and forward payment technology as well. So let me go through that a little bit. Let's say you have a patient with CHF or with hypertension that is not well controlled, and you give them devices or their insurance you know, provides them with certain devices. Well, they're collecting data that tells you on average what is their daily weight or what is their blood pressure during different times of the day. And someone has to manage that data and make a conclusion from that as far as treatment plan is concerned. So in the past, that was not easily reimbursed. And now, starting next year, Medicare is going to allow us to reimburse that that service. And then the other methodology is the store and forward. Store and forward is a patient on their own time takes an image or video of whatever their issues are and then sends it to the physician. And the physician, within 24 hours, goes ahead and looks at what was sent to them and then calls that patient or communicates with that patient to say, yes, I think this is something serious and I need you to come in, or why don't I call in a prescription for some medication or cream for that, and you can see me if it doesn't improve. In the past, that was not possible because there was no payment for that service. And again, the physician's time being so precious and limited and burnout such a major issue, physicians weren't excited to take that extra responsibility on. Well, again, Medicare rule change, potential game changer. This could mean now we would, there's a code for this service, and there's certain, you know, restrictions. It has to be done within 24 hours. The response has to be within 24 hours. And it can't be for something you just saw them for within the last 7 days. And then there's a special code that you have to use for that. So, you know, payment mechanisms have been so restrictive as to how we provide care. And I personally am very excited to see how loosening of some of these restrictions in payment will allow us to provide better care for our patient in a timely way, and the physicians get reimbursed for their time.
You know, it's very, very exciting. There's so many email messages or phone messages that we get that we do work that we're currently not being reimbursed for that I think with these new services would lend themselves to being reimbursed for that. And I think everyone would really look forward to being paid for their time that they spend, you know, taking great care of patients. So, well, thank you, Dr. Shaw. This has been very, very helpful for physicians who are on the fence about starting telemedicine or have questions about telemedicine. I think that it's been a great overview and really appreciate your expertise and your passion about this subject. I really, you know, appreciate you spending the afternoon with us and educating us on this. This wraps up the podcast.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Shaw, for all that great information. And Dr. Scuderi, thank you for moderating the podcast. This program is supported by the Alternative Payment Model Committee, and thank you for joining us today.